Rob Aspero here on the Viral Volley Podcast. Be sure to show your support for all of my guests coming on the Viral Volley Podcast by following them on their social media or any other digital resources they may have. It means a great deal to them, so be sure to continue to follow these guests and keep checking in on the Viral Volley Podcast. Hey, Micah, what are your thoughts on your upward path you've taken from club to high school to playing at USC to the USA national team and now playing professionally?
Yeah, that's a crazy question to think of, you know, realizing that I'm a little bit older now that I've had like all of those experiences. It's almost saddening to think about and reminisce. Being 27, being a little older, no. I definitely got some playing years ahead of me, but it seems like yesterday I was in high school and college, you know, so, but speaking of the path, you know, I started when I was younger. I started club volleyball when I was about 13 and was always had the good fortune of being able to play kind of up a lot of the times and playing up above in an age level where I had extremely elite players in that age level and guys that are succeeding right now quite heavily with Taylor Crabb. And, you know, the McKibben brothers were around. I didn't get to play directly with them, but I saw them and the Shoji brothers. And we had a bunch of All-Americans on our Outrigger team. So that turned into collegiate All-Americans. So I was very fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of good players already that I learned a lot from. And I got to, you know, as we grew through club, just enjoying that time, enjoying realizing how much fun volleyball is and developing that love for it. Then going to college, immediately going to USC, which was a huge blessing and a huge, like, one of the best decisions I've ever made. And then being able to, like you mentioned, to make the transition to the national team. It was after my sophomore year. Or towards the end of my sophomore season, I got a call from John Spurra, basically saying, I might consider you. And I was like, all right, that's, so you're saying there's a chance, something like that, you know? So that was a very exciting and humbling call, let's say, to be recognized like that. And then I was able to be kind of work my way into the national team
right
that summer. And get a start that summer and able to win a tournament, a Norseca tournament. It was in Canada. And I played pretty well. I played really well, actually, for my expectations. And so that kind of allowed me to get another shot on the national team for the next summer, at least. And so I'd kind of earned a starting spot, and I didn't do bad enough to lose it. So – I was excited to be able to have that opportunity again the following summer. And then, you know, it kind of grew from there. And so it was always a dream of mine since I was in middle school to be on the USA national team, Olympic team.
Yeah.
And it always was a goal, but I do consider myself very lucky to, I guess, have a very accelerated path to the national team because it's not traditional. It's not a traditional path that I took.
Right.
And I do recognize how fortunate I was to be able to get my opportunity a little earlier than most. Nonetheless, I do think everybody needs to be ready for their opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think more or less most people will get a shot somewhere on the road, and you got to be ready for it because you might only get one. And so I do consider myself fortunate to get my shot. Did I lose you for a little bit?
Yeah. Well, it looked like there may have been a little pause there on my end due to the internet connection, but I definitely want to give you an opportunity to not only name drop some of the guys you grew up with at Outrigger, because there's so many people who are All-Americans or big names that are making it even as we speak today. Like, for instance, McKibben brothers on The Amazing Race a few nights ago, as you may know.
Yeah, I saw that.
Taylor Crabbs just rocking Taylor, the beach world. Trevor. But who are some of the names that you saw playing while at Outrigger or just in Hawaii? Because I know Kamehameha is a power high school in volleyball as well. So.
Yeah. I mean, we were surrounded by just an impressive class of talent. Let's see, guys that I played with: Taylor Crabb, Henry Cassidy, Benjamin Lamb, Tyler Cundiff, Josh Taylor, Madison McKibben.
Is that all?
Triborn, yeah. Brad Lawson, Eric Shoji, Kavika Shoji, Riley was a little older than me. But all of these guys, they come back to the Outrigger and you watch them play Veach and you work your way up. Trevor Crabb.
Yeah.
You work your way up and you're just, if you're a little like a younger guy, you sit your turn and you got to earn it.
sit your turn and earn it, right?
And you got to earn it. And then when it's your shot, if you can hang with the big boys, you can hang. All right, you can stay little rookie. Or if you can't stay, then you can't hang. And that's just that was almost the pull of it too. It was like, all right, well, I want to be there one day. I want to work to be able to play with the big boys.
Mm-hmm.
And so you watch, you learn. And when you get your shot and eventually you realize that you can hang or you had the opportunity and you made the most of it, that's a huge confidence boost.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's that was a fun process to go through for sure.
Wow. Well, I've got to ask you, you know, with the talent that you've been surrounded by, and I know that you're a super humble guy, which is one of the characteristics I totally appreciate about you, but you're easily one of the best setters in the world. How does someone who's achieved such a level as that continue to improve your game?
Before I forget, I totally goofed. I want to add Jalen Reyes in that conversation too. My guy at Kamehameha too. We had a lot of battles together, so I can't forget Jay.
You can just drop his Nebraska program there, so he'll feel like, you know, he's getting double love as a coach there.
he's balling right now. I'm very stoked for him.
Yeah, but,
can you repeat the question? I was like, dude, I can't forget Jay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, no worries. Hey, so, you know, obviously being – I know that just from knowing you personally, you're a super humble guy, but fact of the matter is you're one of the best setters in the world. And I know a lot of people would back me on saying that, but how does someone that has achieved that level of success in your specific position continue to improve your game?
I think it almost happens. It almost goes hand in hand. You can't really achieve a high level of success without continually wanting to get better and continually mm-hmm. wanting to push yourself. So that's a very good question, but it's also, I do think it goes hand in hand because if you're satisfied for that where you're at, then you're never really going to be pushing yourself to be the best mm-hmm. That you can be. And, you know, I'm striving to be the best Micah Christensen I can be. I'm striving to be the best Team USA setter that I can be to help my team win. And I think that does help add myself to the conversation of the very large list of elite setters in the world that there's so many. And to be considered one of them by a lot of people is a huge blessing. It's very humbling, but it's also a motivation, you know, like, I don't, you know, there's always, I don't want to be one of the many. I want to be the one.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the unanimous decision. So, there's always more to achieve, but it's also, you know, an intrinsic motivation of mine that doesn't really, you know, it motivates me, but it doesn't confirm who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because who I want to be and the player that I want to be is the best player that I can be.
Right.
I don't want to be someone else.
Well, if I'm breaking up, I apologize. I think my
if I can be the best that I can be.
Right. Now, I'm going to shift gears into, I guess, just shortly after your collegiate career, but immediately out of college, you and your now wife, Brooke, decided to spend the rest of your lives together. And it seems generally that in the volleyball world, that it goes against the grain, so to speak, because you're young. But what brought you to that decision, especially with the international lifestyle and career that you'd be living?
Yeah, I think it does get very difficult for a volleyball player that's going internationally constantly to have a social life in America. You know, it's like you're very naturally going to have a long distance relationship if you find somebody outside of, you know, when you're playing professionally. I was very fortunate to find Brooke when I was in college. And I got to know her and be friends with her and then start to date her. And I got to know her for a couple of years before traveling internationally. So I did my first year professionally without her. She was finishing her nursing school, and but we were engaged at that time. And then a week after the Olympics, a week after the bronze medal match, we got married, and she came over with me to Italy. So that was, I consider myself very lucky to be able to know her and find, you know, my wife, the love of my life at such a young age, where I didn't have to bounce back and forth from America and have to explain to a girl that I like, oh, by the way, I'm gonna go to Europe for 7 months out of the year. And so I don't know how much you like me or how much it's worth it, but if it's worth it or not, but this is kind of my situation, so I don't envy that, that's for sure.
Well, you have a unique USA team where there are a few guys that are like that with Taylor and his wife Rachel, Dave Smith and Kelly Smith, but there's just a group of guys of support that it seems like it just seems to be the right time for you guys to be together on the team because you're going through the same stage of life.
Yeah, it actually is really cool. We have like let's see, at least, how can I count them? Taylor, Kavika, Garrett, and David, then David Smith, we all have very young babies now. Matt has a young
That's
baby
right.
as well. And
Yeah.
so they're all within 2 years of each other. So we're going through a lot of similar situations together and bouncing experiences off of each other and saying, oh, yeah, you're getting to that one. Zeke's the youngest, or one of the youngest out of a lot of the other kids. So they're like, oh, you're getting there now. Okay. And so I'm getting tips for how to deal with that, or seeing how this works, or we're texting each other. Yep. How's your jet lag working for the young kids? So we definitely are in extremely unique situations as younger parents living overseas, getting all this culture, raising our children overseas, going to an Italian school or a Polish school. And having these experiences that are extremely unique, but to be able to share those experiences with others is a huge deal for us.
I always picture like if Brooke kind of got tired of changing diapers, like a comment she could say to you is, "Look, you've got the hands, dude. Why don't you take a turn at changing the diapers?"
Oh man, we've been fortunate enough to be alternating a decent amount, but I will say this on record, on camera, and wherever, my wife is a superwoman, and she is the glue that holds this family together.
Yeah, Brooke is rock solid and some one of the friendliest other wives that I've come in conversation with on the USA team. So it's well, actually, I met her at SC. So back in the
Yeah,
day,
that's right.
so that's a
Yeah.
long time you guys have been together.
Yeah, it's been so much fun. She's my best friend, so to be able to go through all of this stuff together, to be able to watch our son grow up together and just appreciate how unique this situation is in terms of how many, what, you know, so many experiences that we get to bring back home with us and add to our lives that so many people don't get to experience is something that it's such a positive for us, then we try to think that way. Although there are some negatives to living this life, being very far away from family, getting into the workforce much later. But there are a ton of positives that We're definitely trying to focus on those and use those to the best of our ability.
Right. Well, let's jump over into more current events. You received the 2018 FIVB World Championship and 2019 FIVB VNL Bestseller Awards. And there's an obvious elevation of your play that was trending into 2020. With the uncertainty of the pandemic and the decision was made to cancel the 2020 Olympics, can you walk us through your emotions and thoughts that you had in regards to receiving this news?
I was definitely concerned when I realized all of the leagues were kind of shutting down and getting canceled. But when I heard the Olympics were going to be rescheduled as opposed to canceled, that was a big sigh of relief.
Right.
Because I mean, as I've started my career and kind of, went to an Olympics now, my goal is to, try to get to a handful of Olympics. And so if one were to get canceled, that is something that you've worked for 4 years for, and to not be able to get a chance to compete for Olympic gold medal, which is ultimately the goal, that would be just heartbreaking for me.
Yeah.
Because if I'm trying to go to four, if I'm trying, say in theory, I'm trying to go to four, and if I only get three shots at an Olympic gold medal instead of four shots, that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And so, as a competitor, I want that thing. I want that thing around my neck. I want to represent, and I want to do it. And I just give me a shot. It doesn't matter if it's 2020, 21.
Yeah.
Anytime, any place, just give me a shot, give us a shot, and I think we'll do pretty well. So I'm, excited that it wasn't canceled, but obviously a little bummed that it wasn't going to go as planned.
Right. Now, obviously, you got to spend more time with family. You probably came back to the islands, got to spend some time with your parents, and they got to see little Zeke hanging out. Had to be pretty refreshing for your soul.
That was an incredible time that I've never even imagined having in my volleyball career, because the most I've ever been home throughout my, let's say, professional career, when I've been playing with a national team for about 8 years now, is like the most I've been home is about 2 weeks in the entire year.
Right.
And that's like the maximum. Usually it's 5, 6 days. So to
Wow.
be able to go home and spend time with my family for, 3 months was something, and not really have any obligation, was something that was such a blessing for us to be able to watch Zeke grow up over there, to be able to just, I guess, reappreciate the things that, I grew up around. And because when we're going back for 5, 6, 10 days, let's say maximum, there's a huge checklist to do. I gotta see this, gotta eat that, gotta see him or her, because we only have a couple of days out of the whole year. And so this time it was basically, you guys are forced to stay home. You can't go see anybody, and go enjoy being a family. And that was something that was so special, that we'll cherish forever. And obviously wish situations were different, wish situations didn't have to come to that, but we're definitely grateful for that time.
Well, hey everyone, I'm speaking with Micah Christensen, the USA Men's National Team setter, 2016 Rio Olympics bronze medalist. He's with me here on volleyballmag.com. We'll be talking more with Micah on the Viral Volley podcast. So follow URL, but Micah, I appreciate your time here with volleyballmag.com. Everyone, I'm Rob Sparrow, and on screen with me, or if you're listening through the bandwidth, I've got Micah Christensen, the USA Men's National Team setter, 2016 Rio Olympics bronze medalist, USC superstar phenom at setter, but he also beat up my Irvine team at outside hitter for a little bit there. So, hey, Micah, thanks for joining me again here, coming over from the volleyballmag.com interview onto the Viral Volley podcast.
Appreciate you having me, man. It's been a lot of fun, and it's always great talking to you, Rob. And I really appreciate the shout out there as an outside hitter, you know.
Hey, setters got arms. People don't know that.
Oh, my arm's been dead for a little while, but it's fun. It's fun to dream.
Man, you did some damage. I remember those matches. I'll go pull the highlights in the Irvine reels and show you the damage you did to my team here.
Oh man, those are the good old days. That was a lot of fun.
Hey, I got to ask you now, during the season in Italy, it looks like you are the lone American on your roster. Do you ever have the opportunity to connect or hang out with the other Americans when you play their teams? I mean, I'm not sure like location-wise where everyone's in relation to where your team's located, but it seems that it's pretty close, at least if you look on a map.
Yeah, so normally, you know, pre-COVID, a lot of you would go to a team's hotel. You would go to, if say if we play on Sunday, we would go on Saturday to that team city and stay in the hotel, and then stay overnight, and train in the morning, serve and pass, and then play the game on Sunday. So normally, if you got an American on the other team or friends, you drive to the hotel and you chat and you hang out after dinner for a little bit and catch up. So this year there's a little bit less of that because you can't really go to the hotels anymore. You always have to be, you know, we're being controlled and not controlled in a bad way. That's an Italian word that I just translated into English. We are being taken care of very well and with the protocols. And they're taking it very seriously, which is a good thing. So there's probably a little less of that, but we do, you know, when we're on the court in warm-ups, we're able to chat and catch up. And you know, I'm being very close to Kavika Shoji, who's playing in Padova this year. Seen him a couple of times. Our wives are really good friends. We do have two babies. Each of us have a child that are very close in age and good friends. So it's been fun to try to get together with them. Aaron Russell and James Shaw are in Piacenza that are close. I've had dinner with them, and Thomas Jeschke's in Verona, which is also very close, and we're planning on getting together all together. So it
Excellent.
is a cool thing. It is a cool thing to have a bunch of Americans in a decently close range.
Yeah, even in during COVID, I imagine there's some challenges, but you're still able to do it then.
Yeah. Obviously, we're trying to be real smart with masks and social distancing and all of that good stuff. But the players that are in the league are very much under some strict protocols. So we do have that reassurance as well.
Well, even more current events on the court, and I know I spoke to you last week, and since I spoke to you, I believe your team has two losses, won three matches that were dropped, and one of them was just Wednesday night, I believe. But you know, it's a pretty tight race in the Italian league there. I believe you had a 3-1 loss to Alliance Milano, and then Wednesday night, Trentino.
We actually did not play. We
I
didn't
was
play
wondering what
Wednesday
happened
night.
because on the website there was no results, and then it posted a 1-3 result for whatever reason. So clarify what happened there, because I know there's some really odd things going on because of COVID in all the European leagues.
Yeah, so thankfully that wasn't COVID related. It was so they kind of have like each week, say like in the NFL, they have week five games. And so that was a week five game. It's going to be postponed or losing some connection here. There we go.
Oh, there we go.
Can you hear
So,
me now?
yeah. So just to go over that just in case really quickly about the week five explanation.
Yeah. So that game, every other team played, but us in Trento on Wednesday. And so it was scheduled for, it's a week five game, let's say, but it's rescheduled because Trento had some Champions League obligations that they have to play a bunch of games.
Oh, okay.
So things are subject to change. It wasn't like a surprise for us. We
Okay.
knew we weren't going to be playing that game
Well, that's
on
interesting.
Wednesday.
It
So
posted as a 1-3 loss for you. I'm like, wait a second here. Now I feel super bad. It's back-to-back
no,
losses here
no.
since I've talked to you originally.
No, thankfully it wasn't. So we lost a bit of a heartbreaker against Milano, who's got a really good team this year, but Yeah, we're on the up and up. We're going to be just fine, and we're playing Aaron Russell and James Shaw on Sunday.
Oh, you jumped ahead of me. That's my next question. So what do you expect to see against them? I mean, has James Shaw been starting in his lineups? And you know, being that you're familiar with Aaron and James, do you have a little inside track?
Well, I mean, at this level nowadays, you play against a lot of the top players in the world a lot. So you're able to, know their tendencies and know their second shot and their third shot. It just depends on which one they want to do in that particular moment. So everybody's really good at this level, incredibly good. And you just try to take their best shots away and defend the others. And so even though I know the scouting report really, really well on Aaron Russell, it's still very hard to stop him. And but
You just out jump him. You can do
oh, that guy cannot
it.
out jump. That is not a battle I want to choose. But James is actually playing behind Gregory,
Grosser from Germany.
George Groser. How you say his first name? Everyone calls him
It's
George.
George. Yeah, that's what
Who
I
is
saw.
one of the best outsides or oppos in the world, has been for a long time. So James is learning from a really good one, and I think he's rehabbing some things as well. So
Yeah. Well, they've got a Cuban on that team as well, Raidel Arizuelo, I believe his name is.
Yes,
I remember
he's
seeing him at the
exciting.
North SECA Champions Cups. I was like, my goodness, they are loaded.
Yeah, he's athletic. He's very athletic. They actually got another setter. They just signed another setter as well. I think 2 days ago or yesterday. And so he might be Badanovic, who's ex-Italian national team setter, who could come in and could start as well against us. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, let's find out more about your team. It's Leo Shoes Verona. Tell us about your team. So you've
Modena,
got,
Modena.
Verona. See, I knew it. I should just let you say it. I'm always worried when I go international here. I try my best though. But you've
No
got a
problem.
few.
Verona is where Thomas Jeschke's playing.
Okay. Gotcha. All righty.
Yeah,
Well,
we're Leo
I just
Shoes Modena. Sorry about that.
Modena, sorry.
No
So with
problem.
Modena, you got a few Italians, some Serbians on your team, Cuban rounding out with the French standout Libra, Jenya Grebennikov. What are your expectations, outlook going on this season forward?
Yeah. So like you mentioned, we have a lot of international players, and most teams are filled with international players this year. Really quickly, I think not a lot of people know this in America. I know I didn't when I wasn't playing professionally, but in Italy and most leagues, but in Italy particularly, there's a rule on every t for every team, you must have three Italians in the lineup at all times, on the
Oh,
court in the lineup at all times.
okay.
So you can have a bunch of foreigners, but you do have to have three Italian players on the court at all times. That includes the libero who can go out because the middle
Right.
blocker is serving. So in the rotation of seven players, you must have three Italians. So regardless of how many foreigners you have, you still need to figure out a way to get Italians on the court. So we do have a couple Serbians. One of those who is now naturalized Italian after living in Italy for 10 years, which is Stankovic. So he plays as an Italian, which is a huge advantage for us. But we have a mix of older veterans and younger guys that are a little bit more inexperienced in let's say like big clubs that expect a lot of trophies and wins. So it's been fun to battle, to learn together, to grow together. We have a totally new team from last year, which is pretty rare. So I'm setting, let's see, 10 new guys out of 12. So there's a learning curve to find each other's rhythms, learn the ball that each player wants to get. So there's that learning curve, but it's also been a lot of fun just to have a new team, to be able to strategize around a new team and to each player's strengths.
Now you mentioned that the learning curve, and that's all, it seems like it's more from a technical standpoint, but how about from a communication standpoint, being that as a setter, you are like the quarterback of the team running the offense. Is there a language barrier in regards to being able to communicate the offense or just even communicate on the court?
Well, definitely not anymore. I speak Italian now, so I'm super comfortable speaking Italian pretty fluently. And so that communication barrier is very much minimalized, let's say, since the first year. The first year I was here in Italy, you know, luckily a lot of the players can speak a decent amount of English, especially the foreigners, the Serbians, even Polish players, German players, they all learn English at a pretty high level.
Right.
So I was fortunate to play with a lot of those players. But you also, in Italy, it's very common to learn the Italian verbiage of the volleyball terms quite quickly. So
give me an example. Once I,
like libero is an Italian word, and it was created because the libero means free in Italian. So it's called libero because they can enter and exit the court freely without doing a substitution.
Right.
So you learn things like that. Like ball is palla. So you can just like, that's very, like, you're going to hear that a lot on practice. So once you hear it for a week, you can kind of figure out ball, quick, high ball, higher, lower.
Oh, they don't say, give me the gap, go ball.
It's hilarious because I've played with Max Holt for a little while and he's calling gaps. He's giving me all kinds of American calls. And so a lot of my teammates now call those things gap and all those and a lot of the things instead of like in Italian, it's called like the seven, like a, or a shoot, like a sette.
Shoot set. But yeah.
Yeah. They call it like a seven. And so a lot of my teammates seven? Say, yeah. And so, yeah, it's like seven, but it's in Italian. It's called sette. But yeah, it's been funny to have Americans that are teammates that we, you know, have our certain types of communication throughout the balls, and then
yeah,
the Italians hear it and they're like, oh, I'm gonna call it that just to have fun with it, and then they now it's become a habit.
Well, how about if they say, hey, run the bic?
They don't call it bic, they call it pipe, thankfully.
Okay.
Everything is pipe. Yeah. So it's a little funny to, because, you know, as an American too, like you come back to the national team and you have all your certain calls and you have all the calls that you're used to in an American system. And then you go back to Italy and you have to just completely change your language and think on a fly. If somebody's calling a certain ball, and you have to know, and in a split second. And so you throw in the wrinkle of having two Americans last year, them calling the American calls and the Italians calling the Italian calls. And so it was a fun little language test for me.
And that's why setters are the brain of the team. Come on. You know that. I know that. All right. Did I lose you? Still there? Hello?
Oh, I think I lost you.
There all right, go. There we go. Back.
Yeah. Yeah, I got you. I got you.
All right.
We try to be the brain of the team. We try to be.
That's right. The middle blockers eat raw meat. The setters are the brain, and the muscles are the outside hitters and the pin hitters.
Yeah, they just got to do their thing.
Yeah.
Do the thinking for them.
Yeah, let's go with what you're dealing with now currently in league play, but with professional teams and sporting events being affected by COVID, is there a difference in the level of play and competition based on like COVID requirements, be it international, like travel or, how has COVID affected the league play this year versus what you've seen in recent years on the international level?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's affected the play at all. I think in regards to training, in regards to physical health, everything's pretty much the same. You know, we do go through all of our protocols. We get swab tests every week, if not twice a week sometimes. So we're very much taken care of. And
Right.
so we, you know, when we're in the gym and we're on the court, we're gone, and it's normal. And we're in the weight
Right.
room, it's all normal. So in the volleyball aspect, and like let's say technical skills aspect, nothing's really dropped off.
Okay.
The difference is the fans in the arena still can have definitely not max capacity. The most we've had was 25% capacity, which was still a lot more fun than having no fans in the stands.
Right.
So, and in Italy and in Poland, you know, and all of these European countries in these professional volleyball leagues, you get full gyms like every
Yeah.
game. And so coming from college, coming from America, that doesn't happen. And so, you know, everywhere my team is gone for a long time, even if they don't get full gyms normally. I don't know, when I've been lucky to be on two pretty premier teams, two clubs that are very premier and prestigious, and everywhere we went, it was a full gym, and so it was all sold out. So it's been a great experience. I think it's also something that's a lot of American fans don't realize, and even youth don't realize, you know, like volleyball isn't, I don't want to say isn't what it is in America, because volleyball is still very popular in America, but volleyball is much, much bigger here,
Right.
in terms of popularity, in terms of fan involvement and popularity of people coming to the games and cheering the whole game, singing the whole game,
Yeah.
waving flags, and just, you know, it's a real it's a it's a it's the real deal here.
What's number two right behind football, or what we know is soccer in America? So,
Yeah.
and they're filling their stadiums 100K, and volleyball is just the same. So, and they're smaller venues. So there are a bunch of fans that are wanting to be where you're at playing, but they've only got 25% capacity, and that must be brutal. At least the online stream is kind of working, and I know I've been having challenges because I've been trying myself here from the US.
Yeah, but well, I think there's been a big complaint because the online streaming service that we've kind of the league's contracted hasn't been working super well.
Yeah.
So that is it is it is called 11sport.
ElevenSports.it, right? Is that the one?
Yes, dot IT, exactly. And so they've been having a lot of complaints, but I think they're trying to work on it. But that is the way that you watch and you can keep up with our Italian league games. And so we have that strictly does the Italian league. We have eight, I think, Americans playing in the Italian league right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely very high level volleyball for those that are curious in watching high level volleyball every Sunday and Wednesday. Definitely should try to tune in to some Italian league Superliga volleyball, because it's definitely got some of the best players in the world, and it is, I think, unanimously decided as the strongest league in the world at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, figure you have a 6 p.m. match in Italy. That's 9 a.m. here. Go watch your match and go to church, or go to church early and watch a match.
Perfect.
Oops. All right. Here we go. I think we're back. Uh-oh.
Do that.
All right. Back.
Hey, Rob, can you hear me?
Yep. Got
I
it.
hope it's not me. Is it my internet?
Well, mine's saying it. Mine is
Okay.
unstable for whatever reason, but that's the first I've seen that here. So, and I'm showing full strength, but I'll go and edit that part out here.
Okay. Well, what were we saying?
Oh, just
What were
about
you
like
just saying?
watching the matches on the stream at 11 Sports IT.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But the timing of it works out perfect. If you're Wednesdays and Sundays, at least catch a Sunday match because that's a 6 p.m. match for you. It's 9 a.m. out
Yeah.
here. We could watch the match, go to church, have lunch, or wake up
Easily.
early.
Yeah. And go to church early, watch the end of the match if you'd like to. I was as I got into college, as I got into my later years in college, I was watching a lot of games, professional games that were on YouTube, just replays of professional games on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, oh wow, like yeah, this is a thing. This isn't just, you know, collegiate volleyball where, you know, obviously it was some of the best times I've ever had in my life, but it wasn't sold out stadiums for the most part. So this it's fun to see and just even be exposed to as a youth volleyball player of like, man, like I can my dr like this can be a dream and this could be a career that can set me up for the rest of my life.
Well, let me ask you this question here. It seems that you particularly have an endearment for Italy, being that you've only played professionally in that particular country. First three seasons with Cucine Lube Civitanova, did I say that correctly? Or just
Yeah, good
Lube?
enough.
And then
Very good.
your second team with Modena. So has that been by choice or you just following the contracts?
Well, I think there's definitely been a lot of consideration towards Italy. I think I had signed a 3-year contract for my first contract, so to be able to play in Civitanova was a huge honor as one of the biggest clubs in Italy in the world. We got to win an Italian championship here and an Italian cup when I was in Civitanova as well. And then moving over to Modena, which is arguably one of the most famous clubs in the world, if not the most famous club in the world in terms of the history of volleyball and how relevant they've been for so long. It was a pretty easy decision in regards to the level of play. I know I'm going to be challenged every week. I know I'm going to be playing around some of the best players in the world. I know I can be competing with some of the best players in the world and be on one of the best teams in the world. Obviously, the contracts and the numbers all have to add up. But it's also been a place where my wife and I, and now my little boy, we're very comfortable here. And after this is our 6th year here now in Italy. This is my 6th year. This is my wife's 5th year in Italy. And so we speak the language. We understand the culture now. We're doing our best to understand it even more and learn the language even more. So it's a comfortable place for us, and we're super fortunate.
Well, that's actually a good segue for my next question. We actually alluded to it in the volleyballmag.com interview, but along with the Sander family, the Smith family, Wangu Tutia family, and the Kabika Shoji and his family, you're one of the handful of USA men's national team athletes who have a young family abroad. How's it like adjusting to life on the road with Brooke and Zeke with you out there?
Yeah, definitely the time adjustment is tough. I know I've mentioned it before, but the time change and the jet lag is something that is not easy, especially just with a little one. Like we have a 9-hour time change from California to here, so it's completely different, and a 12-hour time change from Hawaii to here. So it is a complete switch for a little kid to deal with. So it takes about a week and a half for them to be completely, or for the most part, adjusted, and not waking up in the middle of the night for 2, 3 hours just to play because they're just used to it. So, we're trying to figure out strategies. We're learning things every year, but we do those trips quite a bit with the family now. So, those are also extremely unique situations that we have a lot of. You gain a lot of respect for as well for people that do that a lot. And something that Brooke and I have talked a lot about, living here and being a foreigner in another country and not being able to speak the language in the first couple of years and not really knowing how things work, it's given us such sympathy for those who come to America and don't speak the language or don't understand certain things of,
Culture
certain
dynamics.
etiquette dynamics. Yeah, exactly. Driving dynamic, things like that. It's like, man, you gain a whole new respect for those that are just getting completely out of their comfort zone and doing it because they're challenging themselves or doing it because they have to find a better life for themselves and their family and the sacrifices that they're making. You gain a whole new sympathy and appreciation for kind of those people, of like, oh, wow, we've been there and it is uncomfortable. And that person that extended like the olive branch and like was extremely loving and patient with us really made our day and changed like our whole week.
Well, I mean, obviously pre-COVID, there was a their own challenges, but now with a COVID culture that all of us are existing in, how has that changed? Like, has it, because people obviously have to practice social distancing and they're not as, let's just say, as affectionate, or they're not as willing, at least it seems from here in America now, people are a lot more cautious and it almost seems like it's becoming impersonal. How is it like in Italy right now?
Yeah, I think it's definitely like that here as well. Italy was one of the first countries outside of Asia. I think it was the first country to be hit very hard by COVID, and we were in the middle of it, and I was there in the middle of it. So, I do believe that has affected how Italians treat this situation. Like they got hit very hard. They didn't know it was coming. None of us knew it was coming. So, there's a lot of seriousness with the protocols and precautions to COVID here. But Italian culture is a very social culture. You go and you eat dinner for 3 hours and you sit and talk and you have coffee and you go out with friends and you sit and talk and you have coffee. And everybody's outside walking around, riding bikes at the park. So it's an extremely social culture that unfortunately has to be a bit less social right now. And it's been cool because they've been extremely cooperative. A lot of people are being cooperative in recommendations on what to do and how to be safe, and how to basically not relive what happened in kind of the March, April, May times in Italy, where the whole country was locked down and you could not leave your apartment unless you needed to go to the grocery store once a week. Like that was legitimately the rules. And so I
Did
was
that
in
last
contact with
state,
a
how
lot
did
of
they
people.
determine that? Was that by, your address
You
or
like sign up. Yeah. You
Oh,
like
really?
sign up, make reservations to go to the grocery store, and you get in there and you everything's extremely organized and like, I don't want to say organized, but like set up for
It's
you, and then you go to the
regimented to
grocery
get you
store.
in and out.
Yeah. And you have to understand that they don't live in Italy, you don't live in houses for the most part with yards. You live in apartments. And you're very lucky to have a balcony to where you can go outside. So it was apartment living, not running or kids aren't running around outside in the yard. They're in a small apartment for 2 months, 2.5 months, locked up. And so they went through a hard time. And so I do think their response now is trying to make sure that that doesn't have to happen again.
I just it that'd be challenging, especially with little ones. I mean, I have my little ones and they've got to run.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. So does ours.
Kind of shifting gears, within this last week, I was killing some time perusing Instagram and I came across a volleyballmag.com post on their social on Instagram. It was a USA's TJ DeFalco on a jump serve who plays for, I'm gonna try and say it, Calipo Tono Calabria Vivo Valencia. That right?
Pretty dang good.
All right.
Tono Calipo.
Or Calipo, okay. But he was
Yeah.
serving against another team. I'm not even gonna try. I couldn't even see the logo of the other team. But although the video was something that caught my eye, your comment is what caught my eye. And I wanted to touch on that because coming from someone as of stature as you, I was like, I thought it was interesting. I said, your comment was, love the update. Let's keep showing American youth there is a career to be had in pro volleyball. Can you share your thoughts on why you shared that particular comment?
First off, I appreciate you checking that out. But I think it's such an important time for us to be able to use the platforms of social media and like you're doing now with podcasting, you know, the world is so small now where there's so much information. And I think it's important for youth to understand that volleyball outside of America exists, and you can, there's a career to be had. You know, there's, you can really set yourself up for life playing volleyball if you're extremely successful. Or you can gain experiences, getting paid to gain experiences that somebody next to you, when you decide to join the workforce, has never had, and could help you in your future job if you want to go play overseas and make a little bit of money, or make a lot of bit of money and play overseas. And you know, there's, and for me, it was a big deal because I didn't know about it. I didn't know about it until I was in college that professional volleyball existed, and it was like, and it was an organized, and I could see a career out of it. It was like, oh, I thought NBA, NFL, and that was it. And then there was the Olympics. And so, and I'm like, okay, well, this is the NBA over here. Like, it's just, I want to put things into perspective for especially American youth, especially male youth, because boys volleyball is not nearly as popular as it is in America as it is in Europe. And so a lot of boys get turned off by that. Or if you're making the decision and saying, well, volleyball is really fun, I love volleyball, but can I really like take it past high school, or can I take it past college? Because if I can't, then I'm just going to choose basketball, or I'm going to choose a different sport. And so to be able to at least expose that fact and that reality that volleyball is something that you can pursue as a career. You know, unfortunately at the moment there's no league in America for male volleyball players, but there's a lot of opportunity to be had. There's a lot of different leagues in Europe and around the world that are great situations, that are fun leagues, that are professional clubs, and it's truly a joy to be able to play volleyball and be paid to play volleyball and to have that be your job. And so I do think that it's like, it shouldn't be something that boys in America don't realize is an opportunity for them.
Well, hopefully, I know that when the newest CEO of USA Volleyball, Jamie Davis, one of his bullet points his plan was to establish a pro volleyball league in the USA. And we've seen some of the groundwork being done, the VLA, I believe it's called, and then obviously there's the NBA, which I'm not quite sure where they're at, but the efforts are being put in there. And I'd love to see our American, like our collegiate standouts playing in that league, because we have an incredible amount of talent that goes far back, even with you were in that pipeline of people. But as long as I've been following volleyball, the USA has always had a good deep pool of talent. But with that, it's actually a great segue into the next question, which I did not plan out. But without a doubt, the USA has maintained to be its powerhouse status in the world in both men's and women's volleyball, even without its own professional league. But how do male American players continue to be successful abroad, even without this pro league in the States, or just continue to be successful in playing?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think the collegiate system is a huge help to that. You know, I think getting the base of coaching of, you know, high level volleyball in the collegiate, experience, I think you are exposed to incredible, at least I was very fortunate to be at a school like USC with an athletic program that's just gigantic. So I
Well, I
was
mean, your
exposed to
coach too at the
extremely high
time,
level.
Billy Ferguson, was a mastermind. He worked so well with the pieces he had. I mean, yeah, it helped to have you, but he had some good supporting pieces around you too, and strategy
Absolutely,
that was really
absolutely.
successful.
Yeah, so you know, I think the collegiate system, it has been, was so great for me as a, you know, my personal experience to be able to learn different aspects of volleyball, how to be more professional, realizing that, I think the American collegiate sport system in general teaches you how to be pretty professional. It's very regimented. You have extremely high level weight coaching and athletic training, and then your volleyball coaches, everything's very calculated. So you get this professional experience, and then you can take that over to your overseas teams where maybe there's a little bit there's a drop off in certain facilities or experience in working with certain things. So you're able to take that and be individually at least a little bit more sustainable than some other players that I've seen that weren't able to have, the college experience. So I think that I froze. Yeah,
Oh, I'm back.
I won't start yet. There we go. There we go. I was saying I also do think we have a very talented pool of Americans that are making their rounds around the world right now in their professional leagues that like to gather together during the summers and represent the USA.
Well, it's funny. I didn't even think of asking this question, but as you said that, I was like, oh, why didn't I put this on here? But what's your outlook for the USA team come the 2021 Tokyo Olympics?
Yeah, I actually think if they're able to still be had, which is a huge, prayer of mine, but I think it actually could be a big advantage for us, or it could be advantageous to postpone it a year, because we did have Taylor Sander, who needed to get shoulder surgery. We had Thomas Jeschke, who had to get shoulder surgery. So it does allow a one more year for us to get completely healthy with some of our big sticks to get a year of playing internationally under their belt, not only just to just keep their rhythm and keep things going, but after two surgeries that you learn to play with what you got, or if it's the same, if it's better, or if it's a little bit more limited, you still learn your game after surgeries.
And kind of back to the college question, because I definitely want to get this highlighted, but what advice do you have for those wanting to play professionally after their collegiate careers?
I would say get some tape, get good tape, and make sure you are able to get some video of yourself out to agents. That agents can then get those out to teams that need an outside hitter, that need a setter, that need a middle blocker, or any position that you may be. And then a huge thing that I mentioned earlier in this podcast that I did that I thought was extremely helpful to my development was watching high level volleyball. Get on YouTube. Like, YouTube is so, I still watch YouTube videos on volleyball all the time to watch different players, to watch highlights of different players, to learn, to see how they're doing things. Like, use those things that you have access to now that are just so incredibly accessible to see high level volleyball, to get into the mind of high level volleyball players or high level athletes in general. Just continue to use what you got to learn and just watch volleyball, because there's so much to learn. Because in college, I can tell you there's college, the NCAA, American style college volleyball is very different theoretically and thematically to what you have in international volleyball. And so there's things that you can take from there, use things you can pick from international volleyball that I think guys are just doing over and over again, and you guys that you've never heard of. There's guys that you've never heard of that are balling out. and are extremely good players, technical players that just pass dimes, but don't get the big recognition because they're not killing a ton of balls, but are so important and so integral to team success.
Well, I've got to ask you, being that the level of play that you've achieved as an athlete, who would be your top two or three, I guess, inspirations or people you looked up to as far as developing your game?
Oh man. I was a huge, well, I was just a huge basketball fan and player when I was growing up. So I didn't know a lot of volleyball, like I've mentioned before. So I actually don't have like a volleyball inspiration, because I wasn't, I mean, that 2008 team that won in Beijing, I would say their journey was like a very big inspiration to me. That was the first time I watched
It's like a loy ball.
like high level ball. I was like, yeah, I want to do.
My connection's
Right, I
crushing.
got you back. I can tell it's cutting up. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But that was the first time when I watched those guys win that gold medal, and I was like, oh, I want to do that. Like, I want to play at that level. I want that feeling. I want to win what they just did. I want to do. So that's always been with me. And then I took a lot. I watched a lot of like Larry Bird highlights growing up, and watching how his mentality and just like his supreme confidence, and just
He's just
mental
tough.
strength that he had, man. It was physical strength, but mentally he was just incredible. And so that was something that I was like, that's kind of, I'd like to be a little bit like that. And so those were kind of, I was a huge Dirk Nowitzki fan, but that was just because I tried to model my game after his. He was just, yeah, he was awesome. I thought that I played a lot like him in terms of offensively. So those were kind of like inspirations, but in terms of like mentality and like that kind of stuff, like Larry Bird was a guy that my dad kind of really, really enjoyed, and I started to look at, and I was like, oh yeah, I like that a lot. But I like to pick and choose a lot of things that a lot of people say and think, okay, that fits with me, or that doesn't really align with what I'm about. But they're doing it their way and they're having success their way, but I'd prefer to do it a different way. And this is what I'd like. So
That's
I'm
so good.
always trying to learn. I'm trying to learn and pick and choose of technical things, of mental strategies that can help me, that can apply to me, you know, because not every player is the same. And everybody's going to go through different experiences, different situations differently. And so just forming my own process has been a lot of fun, and it's continuing to be a lot of fun.
Well, it's funny because you actually have set me up for one of the final two questions that, based on your response, I had no idea that you were as big a basketball fan as you are, but a certain ESPN Honolulu radio personality wanted me to ask you this question.
Let's do
What
it.
was it like being the tallest player in the state of Hawaii in basketball?
Oh, I was not the tallest player in basketball. I'm tallest on my team.
Oh, were you? Oh, no, did I lose you again? That was the question I.
We're back. We're back.
So what, you were the tallest player in the state of Hawaii or not, or your team?
No, I was the tallest player on my team, that's for sure. Not in the state, but in basketball. But I was definitely the tallest player on my team. So I was, but I wasn't a post player. Like I could post up if I needed to, but I was a ball handler, and I was a shooter and a scorer kind of thing. So I would guard their center on defense, and then I would bring the ball up on offense
Look at you.
and be a point guard. And so I was like, it was a hilarious little mismatch that I had, because I was able to, I would try my best to guard their center. And then if their center wanted to guard me, that was a lot of fun, because then we would just kind of take him off the dribble. And if it was a smaller guy, then I'd work on my post-up game. So I was a little bit of a funny mismatch because I was one of the taller guys in every game that I played. And I was a little faster than the big guys and a little taller than the little guys. So that was, it was fun. It was fun.
Well, that question was courtesy of Tiff Wells, so he's
I
like, gotta
knew it was
ask
going to be a Tiff. I knew it was from Tiff. Big shout out to Tiff.
Well, more on a personal note, reading through your bio, I had no idea about this about you. Your middle name, Makana Maikalani, it
Well
means
done. Well
gift
done.
from heaven. Hey, I hang out with my island people. I'm good.
There you go. Well
But
done.
can you share with our listeners and viewers the meaning of Makana Maikalani as your middle name?
Yes, my middle name is Makana Maikalani, and it's a Hawaiian name. It means gift from heaven, which is a name that my parents gave me after they were trying to get pregnant for quite a while. And had basically, I wouldn't say have given up, but we're ready to consider other options. And then they were pregnant with me. And so that was already a gift from heaven. And then my mom had to have surgery when I was pregnant with her in her abdominal region. And when she was having surgery, there was a decent possibility that I wasn't going to make it, and they said that I was trying to get out before, when they were kind of open. I was trying to get out a little too early, and so that is why my parents named me Makana Maikalani, which is a gift from heaven, because there wasn't, I wasn't necessarily supposed to be all there. So And it wasn't like I was supposed to die or anything when my mom was having surgery, but the percentages weren't spectacular. So it was a wonderful story, and that's kind of a part of the Hawaiian culture, is to if you're going to name somebody a Hawaiian name, it needs to have some meaning. It needs to be special to that family or that situation.
Well, it's a pretty incredible story. I had to ask because I like I said, I did not know, but it's, I mean, knowing your parents now, speaking of when they're watching you play in the United States at VNL or back in the SC days, they seem such great people. And it's very fitting because you make things happen. You go against the odds and you're an excellent athlete as well as person. So it's a very fitting name for you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. A lot of actually everything of who I am is a credit to what they've done. So I'm very, very appreciative and consider myself very fortunate to be able to be a part of the family that I am.
Well, it's all good stuff, and I'm hoping that as we get out of this COVID culture and then we start opening things back up, that get to see it back here in the States and be at some VNL and some maybe some other competitions, and then seeing you add some more hardware to that Olympic medal locker of yours, and seeing you
Oh,
do
yeah.
those great things playing abroad, because I know there's so many great things even in front of you, during for your career. So appreciate you coming on both VolleyballMag.com and the Viral Volley Podcast, Micah.
Yeah, man, appreciate you having me, Rob. I appreciate your time and your patience with me. I do apologize if I'm saying like random things in weird ways, because a lot of times I'm thinking like in Italian words as well, and they
No,
translate
not at all.
into the direct context. Maybe doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but
Well, it
I've
makes.
been doing my best.
Hey, you did incredible, and you're. I mean, if there's one thing I definitely want to ask, one more thing of you is, what words of encouragement do you have for our listeners and viewers going through this time in history? Because we've heard it so many times, this is an unprecedented time in history, and we're having to adapt in ways that we've never seen before. But what advice would you have for them, or words of encouragement?
I would say love others and put others before yourself during these strange times. I know a lot of people are going through some very difficult things that you may not know about. And so make sure you're loving others as much as you can before yourself. I think that that's pretty much a golden rule that I've tried to live by, and what my Lord and Savior tells me to live by. But then I think advice too is like, think of it, as negative as it may be, take everything that you can and learn and try to become the best that you can be, and spin it into something that you learn from, that you can take and pick and choose and use in a bright light somewhere along the road of like, I'm prepared for this. I've been through, I've had to work from home forever for 6 to 8 months, and I can do this. I can handle any situation that's thrown at me. Or, I've been through certain experiences, and I think just using these things to the best that you can to learn from them and to come out stronger and better on the other side is something that we all can strive to do, as hard as it may be. I think that we can always look to take things in a positive light and turn them into learning experiences.
Excellent advice. Again, this is Micah Christensen from the USA men's national team, and don't want to mess up the team name again. Leo shows Modena and in
Well
Italy.
done.
And appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing how your team does in the you still have plenty of play left here. So be tracking you, Micah, and please do be safe and enjoy the time that you're in.
I appreciate you, Rob. Thank you very much. You too.